Hi, my name is Judy, and I have an eating disorder.
Hi, Judy.
I am a binge eater, but I'm also a grazer. So between the two of them, I was pretty much a constant eater with intermittent periods of binging, but if not binging, just always eating. And I don't really say I'm compulsive anymore because in the past, at times, I would actually use that as an excuse to eat. I would eat and then I would say, but I'm compulsive and the urge overtook me and I'm compulsive. So what can I do about it? You know, so I don't say that anymore. I say I have an eating disorder. I also don't like to say that's who I am. You know, that's my identification of myself. It's just, it's part of me. It's part of who I am. It's a challenge that I have. I think it's a challenge that I'll always have. But it's not necessarily who I am. There's a lot more to me than that. So that's why I say I have an eating disorder. And I was pretty much a normal-sized kid. I was very, very active. But I did always have a preoccupation with food. I grew up in a big Irish Catholic family. And before my brother was born, I had four sisters. And my father drank. And my mother babysat. And we have a saying in our house, which we still say to this day, there are two kinds of people here, the quick and the hungry. So if they went shopping and you saw something that you wanted, you had to eat it all right then and there, because if you came back tomorrow, it would be gone. So I think, you know, I didn't call it binging back then, of course. I saw it, I wanted it, I ate it. I knew it wasn't going to be there tomorrow, ergo I had to eat it all when I saw it, or I wasn't going to get any. And then there were other times there really was no food in the house, and we were drinking like powdered milk, and we were eating like carbs with no toppings on them. I don't want to mention specific foods, but we would just eat things that you're supposed to eat with sauce or whatever, but we didn't have any, so we just ate it without it. And there was always kind of this, I don't know, like even now sometimes I'll think, oh, I better eat dinner because if I don't, I'm going to get hungry and I'll be someplace where there's no food. Like I call it preemptive eating. I still want to eat preemptively just based on the idea that I might be somewhere where there's no food available. Like I would faint or die or or have a convulsion or something would happen to me terrible if I couldn't get the food on time. But I'm not where I used to be with the food. I'll say for 12 years I was misdiagnosed and I was constantly going in and out of the hospital. I'd be out for a month, in for 2 weeks, home for 2 months, in for 6 weeks. And my food was pretty crazy at that time. And I had a thing where I could be abstinent all day. And then at 9 o'clock, I would start eating. And I lived over a 24-hour bodega. It was actually in my building. I lived in an apartment building, and it was on the first floor. And they really didn't sell any food, anything that could pass as food. They just sold junk. And I'd be fine all day, and I would say, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it tonight. And then 9 o'clock, I would be down there. And just that feeling that I would have when I woke up in the morning, kind of like when I opened my eyes and I remembered what I did the night before, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I did it again. When is this ever going to stop, you know? And but then I say, okay, but I won't do it today. And all day long, when I was busy, I'd be fine. But just somehow, sitting in that apartment alone, listening to the clock tick, you know, I really didn't have a support system. I didn't have people to call. And I would just find myself down there every night. And there was one point where I was a normal size. I was in college. This was in years before. And I broke up with somebody, and I was really devastated, and I remember thinking, I'm going to eat whatever I want until I feel better or until I'm over this. And who but a compulsive overeater would say a thing like that, you know? So I gained 100 pounds. By the time I was over it, I found I couldn't stop eating. And I quit weighing when I weighed like 198 because I refused to see 200 pounds on the scale. But I continued to gain weight for a while. After that, I just wouldn't weigh myself. So I'm sure I was at least 225. I'm sure I was 100 pounds heavier than I am now. And I lost that weight in a kind of, I don't know, I think like the disease progresses. I don't think I could do it today, but I would go to college and I would drink liquid meals and I would come home and I would stay on the treadmill for like 3 hours. And that was like kind of a joyless, exhausting way to live. But I did eventually lose the weight. But that was like my main focus in life, just going to school and then exercising for hours on end. And of course, if I ate anything I wasn't supposed to eat, then I would exercise for 4 hours instead of three. But I eventually did get back down to a normal size. But then when I was ill and back and forth in and out of the hospital and all that, my food, I have to say, was pretty bad. And it may sound simplistic, but the more unhappy I was in my life, the worse my food was. And if I was relatively happy, then my food was better. Like some people eat when they're happy. I'm not really, if I'm happy, food doesn't bother me as much. If I'm frustrated, if I'm sad, if I'm grief-stricken, if I'm angry, that's a lot of eating. But, you know, those are particular times when I'm in particular trouble. And somebody said to me, do you think you could gain 100 pounds again? And I hope not. But I do have in the back of my mind, like if I was ever grief-stricken, like I have a healthy fear of the food. Because I really feel like if I get off on a roll, I don't know when it's going to stop. I would like to think I could break my abstinence and eat for a week and then go right back to being abstinent. But the truth of the matter is I don't know when it would stop. And I just hope I am never miserable enough again that I am eating every night. Although now, you know, I have tools and a program and a sponsor and people and something to do about it. Like they say, we're powerless but not helpless. You know, there are actions I can take and there are things that I can do which will keep me from going on, I hope, long extended eating binges that last for months on end. But, you know, occasionally I'll taste something or I'll say I'll have one, which is my famous saying, I'll have one. I don't know how many times I have tried that out, maybe 10,000, and that's no exaggeration to think that 10,000 times I have said I will eat one. And sometimes I do eat one, but 80% of the times I don't eat one. So you would think that it would, like, this is where, this is, to me, that's insanity. Like people say, well, I'm not insane. But to me, to do something 10,000 times and then try it 10,001, that is insanity because it didn't work 10,000 times. And when I want to go to taste something or I want to have one, I always say to myself, like, stop right there because that's not doing step one. Like me saying, oh, I'm not going to eat it, but I'm going to taste it. That's not doing step one, because if I could go around just tasting this and tasting that and not eating it, I wouldn't have an eating disorder. And somebody else at a meeting always used to say, you have to be willing to eat it all. Are you willing to eat it all? So if I'm going to take one out of a package, I have to stop and say, am I willing to eat the package? Because there's a very good chance that that is what is going to happen. I'm going to go back and go back and go back, and I will eat the package. When I was young, I would babysit, and the woman would always say, eat whatever you want. Wrong thing to say to me. But there was one particular thing. I would always say, I'm going to eat a little bit. I'm going to open the container, and I'm going to eat a little bit. And I would take a little bit, and I would put it away, and I would go back 15 times. I would take some, put it away, and I'd say, oh, I'm not going to go back. And then I would go back until I ate the whole thing. And then I would hide the can at the bottom of the garbage. Like, I didn't want her to know. She said, take whatever you want. But I didn't want her to know I ate the whole thing, you know. So I would hide it in the bottom of the garbage. Now, I'm sure the next time this woman went to the cabinet, she said, oh, it's gone. It's not here anymore. I think she figured out that I ate it. But to some extent, if I consume mass quantities, I was always ashamed of it. I always hid it. The first time I lived with somebody, we bought a big jar of something, and I ate it, all of it. And he said, where is that big jar of whatever that we just bought? And I said, well, Nancy was over, and Nancy was my friend who was large, and I said, Nancy ate it. I just kept giving it to her, and she just kept eating it, and she ate it all. And then, of course, the guilt got the better of me, and I said, well, I have to tell you the truth. Nancy didn't eat it. I ate it. And I have to say, for 7 years, he never let me live it down. He would always say, I better not leave you alone with this food. You might eat it all. I mean, he brought it up all the time for 7 years. But I had to fess up. I always did have shame I never sat down and ate a gigantic whole serving of something in front of other people. I would go out to the restaurant and I would eat a little bit and I would take it home supposedly for lunch the next day, but of course it never made it to lunch. It was meal number two when I was home alone and I could eat, you know, with no one watching me. In fact, there was a time when I was heavy and someone actually said to me, I can't understand why you're heavy. You eat like a bird. Sure, I ate like a bird in front of people, but when I was home, I was not eating like a bird. My family will still say to me, well, you don't have an eating disorder. But of course, they are all overweight and they're doing what I used to do with food, except in my family, that's okay. You know, of course, you're supposed to have thirds. Everybody has thirds. There's nothing wrong with having thirds. But it was me, you know, I starting with the babysitting, I noticed that I had a problem. And then with those things, I would say, well, I'm not going to have any. Sometimes that worked. Sometimes it didn't. We used to sell sugar for the school. And I would always have to say to my father, who had a lot of patience, I would say, well, I sold 20, but I ate 20, so I need $40. And he would always say, you ate 20? And I'd say, yep, I ate 20. But he never got mad at me, but he used to hate to see that sugar coming in the house. Because there were four girls, and we were all selling 20 and eating 20. So he bought a lot of sugar between all of us. And but for the most part, I did manage to remain a normal size. But towards high school, when I was going into high school, someone made a comment to me, the first comment anyone ever made about my weight. And this sent me into the realm of dieting, which lasted like till last week. but I started to become bulimic. I would eat a lot of food, and I really never started the binging until I started the quote-unquote dieting, because I would have a pretty strict, I can't even call it a food plan, but I would say, like, I'm going to eat 500 calories a day, and then that would last till dinner. And of course, by then I had the shakes and I was starving and I would eat this big dinner. And I don't know where I heard it or whatever, but I decided that I was going to make myself throw up, because then I could eat a gigantic dinner and I would just throw up. I started trying to do that, and somehow I had scratched the back of my throat and I spit and I saw blood and I said, you know what? This is really sick. What I'm doing is really sick. So I told my father, who sent me to a therapist, and I had one session where I spent the entire session telling her how I ate this little bit of sugar. It was a little bit, but I spent the entire session talking about it. And she said, I'm going to stop you there, and I'm going to suggest you go to OA. And I was flabbergasted. I was like, but I am not heavy. I can't go to OA. You know, and I don't have a problem, by the way, you know. And she just kept needling me to go to OA. And eventually I went simply so that I could tell her. I went, checked it out, you know. Back then they had gray sheet, which I could never do. I'm hypoglycemic, so I didn't know it at the time, but there was no way I could eat three times a day. I became convinced I was constitutionally incapable. So I would go for a while and try to do gray sheet, and then I would decide I was constitutionally incapable, and I would leave, and I would come back in a year, and I would try to do gray sheet. And I stayed away for a long time, for many, many years. I just thought of it as something I had tried and failed at. And I never did too well at weigh and pay places. I could never stick to that, so that didn't work for me. I felt like I had tried it all, and I had tried OA, and none of it had worked. So I was kind of left to my own devices. So it was some years of up and down and up and down. I gained the 100 pounds one time. I only did that one time. But there was another time that I really didn't like my job, and I was engaged, but I really didn't want to get married, I had decided. And the highlight of my life was dinner. What was I going to have for dinner? That was like the focal point of my day. At work, I would think, what are we going to have for dinner, you know? And I saw a photograph of myself, and I realized from seeing this photograph, there were no mirrors in the house, and I didn't weigh myself. But I saw this picture of myself, and I realized I had gained like 40, 50 pounds. I can't tell you how much because I didn't have a scale. I didn't want to know. I didn't look, you know. I was getting a few comments like, you should exercise more, you know. I was hearing a few of those comments, but really, I was used to, if someone was going to say something about my weight, somebody would say, like, look, you're gaining a lot of weight. You really need to lose weight. That's like what my sisters would say to me. And one sister, the rest of my family, nobody comments if anybody gains weight or loses weight. I mean, it's just like it's considered bad form. Of course, no one, you could get dressed up for 2 hours and there's a very good chance no one will mention that. They won't say you look nice or, oh, you're dressed up. Nobody comments on that either. So in one way it was good because no one was picking on me or telling me I looked bad at home. But on the other hand, it is a little bit of denial because I must have gained 40, 50 pounds without really recognizing it or noticing too much. I was noticing some clothes weren't fitting, but I was just buying other clothes. So wasn't bothering me that much. And he would only occasionally say, he would never say, do you think you should eat that or that's your fourth or anything like that. But he would say, I think you should exercise more. And I would think, what is he talking about? You know, I get a lot of exercise at work. But when I saw that picture, I realized, you know, I got to do something about it. I am totally unsuccessful as a dieter. I have very few times been able to diet. One time when I went to the doctor and I was already eating like 1,300 calories a day. And he said, you have an underactive thyroid, but it's borderline. So I'm not going to give you any medicine. I just want you to eat less and exercise more. And I told him, I already eat 1,300 calories a day, and I exercise for 45 minutes a day. I mean, am I supposed to eat 900 calories a day? And he said, no, you could stay at 13, but exercise more. And I said, I got to get another doctor. And that's what I did. I got another doctor who gave me medicine for my underactive thyroid, and I had energy. And I didn't have to eat 1,000 calories a day to stay a normal size. So finding that doctor helped me a lot, really helped me a lot. Like I said, I can't diet. I had one doctor, I went all the way up to the Bronx when I was like 200 pounds, and I was all excited because I was going to Montefiore Medical Center, to the bariatric clinic. I thought, oh, they're really going to help me, you know? It was like 3 hours to the Bronx on the train, and when I got there, he like weighed me, and he gave me a sheet with a 1,200 calorie diet. And I was like, wah, wah, wah. This is not going to work. If I could eat 1,200 calories a day, I wouldn't be this size, you know? Oh, I was so dejected on that train ride home. About the time that I had gained the 40 pounds, I subsequently left that job and broke up with that person. And I should have been really upset because I had no job and I had no fiance. But I was kind of in a good mood, and I said, I think I'll give OA another try. And this time when I came back to OA, I was in Brooklyn, so it was really different because the meetings were really giant, and I would come in just a little bit late, and I would run out as soon as it was over, but then I kind of bemoaned how I didn't know anybody, and I didn't meet anybody. But I heard this one woman speaking, and I got up the nerve, and I asked her to be my sponsor. And I would call her faithfully every day. And I remember she was doing Weight Watchers, but I didn't really think that that was going to work for me. When I went to Weight Watchers, it was 21 points, and I bought all the sugar that you're supposed to have. And like the first day, I ate 14 points of sugar for breakfast, and then I had like 7 points left for the rest of the day. Eventually, I tried it without the desserts, but I couldn't. It was too much for me, the obsessing with the points and the counting and how many points is that. It wasn't what I wanted. I didn't want that. I kind of wanted to be free of obsessing about food. And for a long time, in a way, I would do fine. I was like binging every 2 weeks. And I really said, well, you know, I'm further along this spectrum than these people. This is as good as it's going to get. I'm going to binge every 2 weeks. And so I went along like that for a long time. But I didn't stop going to meetings. And eventually I left Brooklyn, and I used to also go to these meetings in Manhattan that were even bigger, and you'd raise your hand, but 20 people would raise their hand, and it was like 15 minutes left, so. And I would take the train an hour into the city and then take the train an hour back. But most of the time, but things kept improving with my food, you know. Like, people weren't just doing Gray Sheet anymore. They were doing all kinds of food plans. And I had this one crazy food plan, but it was called the Carbohydrate Cravers Diet. So you could eat some carbs at night. And you were really, like, not eating much during the day, so you could eat these carbs at night. But that kind of worked for me because, like, I didn't feel deprived. Of course, there were certain carbs I couldn't eat, like candy. I could not make that my carb at night because I would eat 10 packages. So that I couldn't do. But that kind of worked for me for a while because I didn't feel deprived. And also it had snacks. And I didn't yet know I was hypoglycemic, but I had figured out, because I would get the shakes if I didn't eat for 6 hours, I figured out that I needed to snack. So that kind of worked for a while for me. And then I went to the doctor and I said, what should I be eating? And he kind of gave me like the Heart Association food plan, and that was okay. And now my food plan is pretty much I try to eat 1,500 calories a day with 2 snacks and small meals. And most of the time, that's what I do. Of course, there's some stuff that I don't eat. I don't eat a lot of white flour things. I can't eat sugar. I can't tolerate it. For a while, I ate like near stuff, like sugar-free this and sugar-free that. But I found it made me hungry. So I don't eat too much of that anymore either. And I have to say I turned 50 and I quit smoking. Now, it took me about 10 years to accept that I was going to weigh this number. This number was 10 pounds more than I wanted to weigh. But a therapist has said to me, if you've had this same goal for 20 years and you haven't reached it yet, maybe it's time to get a more realistic goal. I didn't want to hear that. I wanted to hear how he was going to help me perfect my food so that I could get down to the magic number, which I did reach once in college when I had the flu for a week. That was the only time I reached it, and of course it didn't remain. But anyway, he suggested to me that I get a more realistic goal. which really bothered me when he said that. But I decided I was going to try to accept this seemed to be my body's set point, because unless I took extreme action and kept it up, I stayed at this point. If I went over a little bit for a while, I stayed at this point. So I decided I was going to accept this number. And that was pretty blissful for about 3 years, because all I had to do was maintain. And then I turned 50 and quit smoking. So my brother broke my scale. I had a very trusty scale that I had for about 3 years. And I always weighed the same on this scale. And I'm sure it wasn't the scale. It was that I weighed the same. But this scale, I knew how to work it, and I put it on three spots on the floor, and I took the average, you know, because I couldn't trust it, but I trusted that scale, and my brother broke it by accident. So I haven't weighed myself in a while, and the reason I haven't is not denial, it's that I am afraid if I see on the scale that I gain 10 pounds, which I haven't gained 10 pounds, but if I saw 10 pounds, I would go back to smoking. So I said, well, I'm going to just be abstinent and not smoke for a while, and then I'll weigh myself. And I may have to change my food plan and deduct a little bit, you know, if I want to stay that number that I came to accept, or it may turn out that turning 50 and no longer smoking, I cannot maintain that number without drastic action. I'm not a big fan of drastic action. I exercise moderately 4 times a week for like 45 minutes. Some weeks I do it 5 days a week for 45 minutes. And I probably could be a size smaller if I exercise for an hour and a half, 4 or 5 times a week, but I'm just not willing to do it. I don't enjoy it enough to do it. I keep thinking that I'm going to get into swimming and I will swim a lot and that will revolutionize everything. But it's been my goal to learn how to swim laps for 2 years. For 2 years, it was my New Year's resolution and I haven't done it yet. So I don't know if swimming is really going to revolutionize my exercise program. That remains to be seen. But I'm at least kind of open to the idea that I might weigh a little more. Not pleased or happy, but I really think if it comes down to weighing that number but smoking, or weighing a little bit more and not smoking, you know, I used to joke I was dying to be thin, but I really was dying to be thin, like just drinking black coffee and smoking. That was a really effective food plan for a while. I wasn't hungry. And I wasn't eating, so that was good. And when I quit smoking, I was really flummoxed. I was like, what is this? I'm really, really hungry, you know? Like, I hadn't eaten in 5 hours, but I was like, what is this feeling? Like, I could eat a cow, you know? What is this? And it was just that for 30 years, I smoked, so I wasn't used to feeling hungry. But the main thing OA has given me through all of this is that I'm not obsessed the way I used to be obsessed. Even now, going through, do I have to eat less? Even now, like watching my calories, it's not like it was in the past where I was obsessed with it. And if the scale didn't say what I wanted to say, it was a miserable day. You know, I gained 2 pounds. I mean, that could put me in a tailspin for 3 or 4 days, you know? It's not like that anymore. I'm not obsessed with it the way I used to be. And I have tools. There are people I could call. There are things I can read. There are meetings I can go to. And incidentally, OA, when I first started coming to OA, it was the only place I had ever been where somebody would sit there and they were doing the kinds of things with food that I was doing. No one talks about this at Weight Watchers. They don't talk about they got stood up, so they ate 5 pounds of sugar. You know, no one's talking about that at Weight Watchers. I guess no one's doing it. They're all at Weight Watchers because, you know, they have a glandular condition or something like that. But Only in OA did I hear people say, you know, I got stood up, so I stayed home and ate everything in the kitchen, you know. No place else were people saying that. And where I came from, there was nothing wrong with eating everything in the kitchen if you got stood up. But I knew I didn't want that either. Like, I could never say I'm a perfectionist because my life and my food are never perfect. But in a way, I was a perfectionist because I wanted to weigh a certain amount. I wanted to look like the pictures in the magazine. I wanted to wear the clothes that I saw in the magazine. And one thing is, like, just genetics. I'm never going to be skinny. I mean, believe me, I tried for many years, many methods. One time I did get pretty thin. I was thinking, like, okay, I want to lose 5 more pounds. And people were telling me, like, you look sick, your face is drawn. And I was wearing my younger sister's clothes. But I couldn't maintain that. I couldn't watch every morsel that went in my mouth and exercise for an hour and a half a day. I mean, maybe some people could do it. I just couldn't do it. But who wants to live that way anyway, you know? I mean, that's really difficult way to live. So I tried it all. I tried extreme low calories, which I failed at miserably all the time. I tried bulimia. I used to say it was a failed bulimic. Because if I had gotten a hold of that, you know, who knows? I would have had a different kind of hell for 30 years, you know. I was the black coffee and the cigarettes. I mean, I really did it all, trying to control the food. It was always about I would do fine, and then I'd eat that one thing I wasn't supposed to have, and I'd go off the deep end. I'll start again tomorrow. So I'm going to eat everything I want tonight, and I'm never going to do this again. So I'm going to eat everything I want because I'm never going to do this again. I mean, countless umpteen times. And now, even if I eat something that's not on my food plan, I always track my food. I write down my food every day, no matter what I eat, bad, good, indifferent. I write it down, and I share it with somebody. And I used to call it Last Supper Syndrome, you know. Last time I'm going to do this, so I'm going to start again tomorrow, so I'm going to eat everything, and if I don't have it in the house, I'm going to go get it, because this is the last time it's going to happen, the Last Supper Syndrome. And I just don't do that anymore. Even if I eat a meal and I'm like, that was really too much, or, oh my God, that was probably 900 calories, or, you know, whatever it is, I don't start over anymore. If I have a bad meal, it's a bad meal. Even if I have a bad day, it's a bad day. And that's like a really big change. And also the not obsessing is a really big change. The spirituality for me, it's always kind of in flux. It's always kind of changing. My father was an AA for 30 years and he was an agnostic for 30 years. And, you know, a couple of times growing up, I would say to him, do you think there's a God? I was in Catholic school, mind you, but I would say, do you think there's a God? And he would say, I don't know, or I'm really not sure. Or then as he got older, he started to say, well, after I pass away, I'll call you. Whatever it is, I'll call you, let you know. And then after he passed away, every time the phone would ring, I would think of that, you know. But when I came back to OA, I would feel like, well, this isn't going to work for me. I'm not religious. Like, I believe on Monday. I don't believe on Tuesday. Then I don't believe on Thursday. Then I don't think about it for 3 weeks, you know. But, you know, I always thought of my father, and he did it, and he was sober for 30 years, and he was never sure. There's a preacher I like to listen to. He's kind of like a motivational speaker who uses biblical examples. And sometimes I listen to him, I think, oh, this is, it's always good. It's always good what he's saying. But sometimes I'm like, yeah, there's the 12 years that I was in and out of the hospital, like that being part of the big plan. I'm not sure I want to meet the author, you know. So it's always kind of changing, and some days I think I have a little faith, and then other days I'm sure there's nothing there, and but it doesn't matter, you know. I mean, I just come to meetings and I listen to other people, and there's usually somebody who went through what I'm going through, or they're going through something worse, or they had a similar situation. So in that way, even if I feel like I have no faith, it doesn't matter, because there's always a good example to follow, like good orderly direction. There's always good orderly direction. And if I'm not happy with what I'm doing and I'm miserable, like people would say, okay, well, you have to follow God's will. And I've never felt like I knew what God's will was, but I always did say, like, if there is a God, it doesn't want me to eat, because that's self-destructive. It doesn't want me to be bad to other people. It doesn't want me to be miserable and unhappy, which that's like a new revelation, because I wasn't so sure about that one for a long time. But I never thought God was malevolent, but I thought it, didn't think it was benevolent. I thought it was disinterested or busy when I needed help. So I said, well, look, if this is the plan, then I would rather believe there's nothing than something that planned that. So for a long time, I was like, there's nothing. I have proof there's nothing. But it didn't matter that there's nothing, because there's still good orderly direction and there's still other people. So it's still always changing for me. I still listen to that preacher. And, like, I try to believe, but sometimes I can, sometimes I can't. But that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as long as I stay abstinent and keep coming to meetings and just say, well, if there is a God, it doesn't want me to eat. And if there is a God, it doesn't want me to be nasty to other people. It doesn't want me to be unhappy, because when I'm unhappy, I eat. So there are a few basic tenets. And I try to read every day. I have a couple of books I read every day. I don't call my sponsor every day. We just don't do that. I catch them a few times a week. But I pick somebody that, first of all, he would always say, I'll help anybody anytime. So I felt like possibly he wouldn't say no. And also, his food was just kind of rock solid. Like, no matter what was going on, he was just... I knew he was rock solid with the food, and that's what I wanted. So I asked him to be my sponsor. And that's pretty much it. It's been like a journey, but now where I am along the journey, even if I'm not happy with what I weigh at the moment, I know the only thing I can do is be abstinent. That's the only thing I can do. And that's the best I can do, and the best I can do has to be good enough, because in the past, the best I could do was not good enough, which only led me to binging. So even if I'm not happy with this circumstance or that circumstance or the other circumstance, I can't do anything but be abstinent. That's the best I could do. If I'm abstinent, at least I could say one thing is going right. You know, I'm not smoking and I'm not eating. And I, you know, when my father used to have this friend who would come around the house, and he would say, and I'd say, how's it going? And he'd say, well, it's a good day, I didn't drink today. And I used to think, well, join the rest of us, because we didn't drink today either. And I went to school and I went to work, you know. But he would say, no, it's a good day, because I didn't drink today. And I used to think, oh, God, there has to be more to it than that. You know, you can't be satisfied with yourself because you didn't drink. I would never say that to him, but that's what I would think. But now, years later, some days I say to myself, well, I didn't eat and I didn't smoke, you know. And that was like the highlight of the day, you know. So now I get what he was saying all these years later. And, you know, I think I'll still be coming to meetings. As long as I can drive, I'll be coming to meetings. And when I can't drive, I may move back to Manhattan, because you can always get to a meeting there, bus or walking. Somebody said to me, well, would you ever move to, and they named this place, and I don't think I would move there, because I don't think there's enough OA there for me. So, I mean, I know people who move out to the boondocks, and they go to meetings on the phone, and Oh, I would do it in a pinch if I had to, but I'd really get a lot out of face-to-face meetings, and I was would always want to be someplace that were face-to-face meetings. I think if I was ever stuck someplace there wasn't, I would try to start some. So that's it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much.